Welcome to Rock Your Reinvention, the show for high-achieving career women who refuse to settle for mediocrity and aren't afraid to take bold action. This is a place where you can authentically show up, where every dream and goal can be validated and achieved. Hi, I'm your host, Karen Freeland, a certified life reinvention coach, speaker, and award-winning author. I'm here to give you the tips, tools, and strategies to help you shift your mindset, build your confidence, and take meaningful actions so you can rock your reinvention. Ready to go from stuck to thriving? Let's go. Hello, ladies. Welcome to Rock Your Reinvention.
Thanks for having us.
We're delighted to be here.
I'm really excited. I mean, I've got two doctors on the show. So I really am like pretty excited about this. So thanks for being here.
We have so much fun talking about this stuff and excited to talk about it with you, who's also an expert. So let's crack on.
All right.
Two doctors for the price of one.
Hey, I like that. That's like a bargain deal.
Telling you.
So before we jump in, I would love to have each of you just take a moment to introduce yourself to the audience, who you are, what you do, maybe a fun fact that you'd like to share with us.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Dr. Erin Hinson. After this, you will just hear me referred to as Erin, but I am a doctor. And so is Kristen. We both have our PhDs in social sciences from the Queen's University Belfast, which is where we met, which is, yes, in a different part of the world. And that is a whole other story for a whole other podcast. But we are corporate trainers. We believe fundamentally in helping people understand humans better. And we know that that makes life better, including all the things you have to do when you work with people, manage them, lead them, deal with conflicts, and all of that kind of jazz. And a fun fact about me, I am a gin collector. I'm a collector of things. I collect lots of things, actually. I have a coin collection. And one of my favorite words in the English language is the name of a person who collects coins. They are a numismatist.
Well, I've never heard that.
So who doesn't want to call themselves a numismatist? Because it sounds very fancy. So yeah, that's my fun fact for the day.
It does. And you know, it's funny because I think if I was a gin collector, I would just drink all the gin. So I'm really impressed that you can actually keep it and just collect it. That's phenomenal.
It's a lot. It's a lot of gin and I do drink it. But if I was drinking all of it, we'd have a different problem on our hands. So
thanks for sharing, Erin. Kristen.
Sure.
And I'm Dr. Kristen Donnelly, again, Kristen, and it is the honor of my life to work with my best friend, to be honest. It's so much fun. And people ask when that started, and honestly, from some of our first conversations, because our brains helped shape each other as we started thinking about these things. I live outside of Philadelphia, where I have lived, except for when I moved to do school in other places, I've lived here pretty much my whole life. And my brother and I now co-own the network of companies that my father started about 33 years ago, of which Erin and I run, called Abbey Research, is part of that. So I get to also work with my little brother and see my dad every day and contribute to this family legacy, which is a real honor for me. And I'm married to a guy that I met actually about 10 days after I met Erin. So I've known them around the exact same time, who is from Northern Ireland. And I joke all the time that the two of them are my favorite souvenirs from my PhD. And it works really well. Fun fact about me is that I married the same man 3 times. So John and I, because of immigration and some other things like that, actually had 3 weddings in the span of about 14 months. 2 in Belfast and 1 with our whole American circus that in Southern New Jersey. And so that's it. But I'm also, we're both, we should say, massive sports fans. So you can also ask us any question anytime about teams from Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, or Colorado. So we're happy to just spew crackpot theories at any point in time.
That's so cool. I love that. And you know, I think that so many people meet in these advanced degree programs and then go on to form businesses or different working relationships together. It seems pretty common.
Well, the advanced degree programs are really, really isolating, and you kind of have to be a masochist to take a lot of them on. So you meet people like you, and you need to meet those people because they're so lonely. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And like I say all the time, you know, curiosity, really, really deep seated curiosity is what drives Kristen and I both. And it always has. Our parents are curious people. They raised curious humans. And so we love learning. We're good at it. And, you know, curiosity took us to studying abroad in Northern Ireland. Curiosity took us to advanced degrees. So like, you have to be curious to want to keep learning and to certainly want to do it at that level where it is very isolating and lonely and toxic a lot of the time. So we came out of it relatively unscathed, mostly whole, but certainly left that world to have our own world.
Yeah, sounds like a great springboard. And I'm really excited for your curiosity because you obviously got very curious about burnout and why this is such a prevalent issue, especially in the United States, but in really work cultures all across the world. So I think that this is such an exciting place to start the Rock Your Reinvention official podcast because burnout is the place where so many people start the reinvention. It's the final straw that breaks the back that's like, nope, something has got to change. I can't go on with this anymore. And for me, it was being diagnosed with silent acid reflux. So I was almost unable to swallow without wanting to cry. It felt like I had razor blades in my throat and I didn't know what the problem was. So I ate more acidic things like ice cream and iced coffee and things that I thought were going to soothe my throat that just exacerbated the issue. I cracked several of my teeth from grinding them so hard at night that then I had to get a plastic night guard. I mean, talk about sexy. What a disaster. But I just had this mentality that like, this is life. This is how work is. This is how it's supposed to be. Just keep going. Put on your big girl pants. So yep. I would love to hear from you. What prompted you to write this book? I mean, was there a burnout going on in your life or were you seeing this in others? Share a little bit about that, the genesis of this.
So we're laughing because while we were writing a book on burnout, I got diagnosed with a new mental health disorder that explained why I'd been burned out for nearly 30 years.
Wow.
So we're laughing. It's hilarious.
On top of double walking pneumonia and long COVID.
Wow. Yeah. And I love that you're laughing.
Her body was like, you have to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. How did you find this out?
Because my body said I had to stop. Yeah. So the kind of long, you know, not the full story, but the longer version of that is that I absolutely grew up in the same culture the rest of us did, but add in a family business in which there are no boundaries and child labor laws often don't apply. So I've been working in this grind culture before we had that word. And then my own chemical imbalances in my brain took that and even more than the culture does, completely wired me to believe that my worth was only my productivity. Like that's it. I am Louisa Madrigal from Encanto with metaphorical donkeys instead of actual ones.
Right.
And so it was decades of this. And I didn't think there was really anything wrong with it ever until I moved to Northern Ireland the first time and then realized that there not every culture on the planet values productivity the same way we do and that different doesn't mean bad, it just means different.
Sure.
And then we tell the story in our book that's about to come out on burnout. But I learned all these lessons about like, yes, you can take tea breaks. Like, yes, you're allowed to sleep more than 5 hours a night. Yes, you're allowed to say no. And then I promptly forgot all of those, moved to Central Texas, threw myself into 2 master's degrees and worked 120 hours a week. And then moved back to Northern Ireland to start my doctorate. And every time I wanted to work on an American schedule, the infrastructure or culture of Northern Ireland said, no, you would like things done quickly. They do not work quickly here. You would like to work 14 hours a day. You will never see any of your friends and they will think you are crazy.
Yep.
Like here is, you have to do this differently. And so when I started kind of realizing that something had to change, but here's the key. I had no idea how to do it because it wasn't just my behaviors that were doing this. It was my own like internal chemistry. So every time somebody said, oh, you have to work less, I'd like in my brain, cool. Thank you so much. I had never thought of that. That is brand new information. And what I didn't personally connect until recently and what no one can tell me is how to actually do that. Sure. Nor did I feel like anybody was ever acknowledging that it required a rewiring of your brain. To stop. So I had to give this TED talk and I lost my voice. And the more stressed I was about it, the more I lost my voice.
Wow.
And I had a complete disproportionate meltdown to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then my voice came back and I was like, oh, I'm better now. It's fine. And then in December, I got double walking pneumonia, which meant I was in bed for 4 weeks. It's the longest I've ever stopped in my life, including vacations. I wrote my PhD on my notes app on my honeymoon. Like, I wrote sections of it in line at Disneyland on my honeymoon. So like, I have never stopped for more than 5 days at a max. And all of a sudden I was on my sofa for 4 weeks. And I kept getting messages in Slack from Aaron and our colleague Eleanor that were just copying and pasting words I had said to other people for years about learning to rest and taking time out and like all those kind of things. And they were like, remember how you're not exempt from this?
It's really easy to give that guidance to others, isn't it?
But
100%. Bring your own 100%. Champagne, it's like, oh crap, no.
No, so good at it. And so then kind of on the back of that walking pneumonia, we discovered I had long COVID and kind of figured that all out. And when we started writing the book about burnout is I think when I think of my psyche and body and everything else is finally when my whole self went, no, we're stopping now.
Mm-hmm.
We're stopping now. And so as I was going through, I was lucky I wasn't hospitalized. There's a lot of people that are when you get to the point that I was.
Yeah.
I was very lucky that that wasn't something that had to happen for my recovery. And I would also say this for other people. I wouldn't have told you that it was a symptom of my burnout or the thing that was the end result probably until 3 months into the process.
Yeah.
When it happened, it wasn't this revelation. It was, I was pissed.
Yeah. And we didn't start writing a book about burnout. We started writing a book about empathy and kind of all of our, the first version, the first, you know, table of contents or outline that we did wasn't about burnout, but we wanted to talk about it because that's one of the topics that we do talk about. And the more work that we did researching it, and particularly Kristen, because she is a speed reader and one of her many talents. So she was speed reading these books on burnout. And she was like, you guys, we're like, we are missing a trick. This is what we have to talk about. And the three of us sat down and we changed the direction of the book and said, we need to just tell this story.
Because I love that.
It is the most important one that we need to get out there more than the other things that we want to talk about still.
And so as we talked more, the more we realized that our foundational understanding of America as a burnout culture is not something we were seeing anyone else talk about.
Yeah. So expand on this for me, because I think this is really an interesting idea of America being a burnout culture. And I agree from what I've seen, because I worked for a UK company for a short time at the end of my corporate stint. And that was the most work-life balance I've ever enjoyed in a corporate setting. It wasn't perfect, but it was leaps and bounds better than being in an American-based tech company. So when you say America's a burnout culture, what do you specifically mean?
Yeah. And I think some of it comes from Kristen's background as a sociologist of religion. There are toxic work cultures and environments all over the world, but we are the worst. And we know this. We have all these stats that back up the fact that we're the most overworked country. We're the most underpaid workers. We're one of two countries that don't have paid paternal leave. We don't have mandated maternity leave. All of these, we can spend the rest of this podcast listing statistics.
Sure.
That kind of back up this data. But we say all of that stuff. And then what Kristen and I noticed the more we paid attention to how people were talking about burnout was that they were talking about it as an individual problem. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're burned out? It's because you're a workaholic.
Thank you.
It's, oh, you're burned out? You don't know how to set boundaries. And we went back to Kristen's talk and she was like, the more books we read, the more articles we read, we're like, nobody is talking about this cultural context. Nobody is talking about this foundation. You were a good person if you worked hard. You were a good person if you worked hard and you did it alone. And rest was for when you were dead.
Wow. You know, oh my gosh, my grandpa used to always say, you can sleep when you're dead. So I grew up, like every time we would visit them, I'd be like, why are you up at 5:30 a.m. making pancakes, grandpa? Like, I'm trying to sleep over here. And he'd be like, you can sleep when you're dead. And I always used to joke and it's like, I just can hear his voice even now. So like, it still brings me some comfort just to have that memory. But I'm like, man, that's some serious conditioning that we need to unwire from our brains.
Yeah. So we took that foundation. And then we went real America on it. Like we went peak America on it. We added the myth of the self-made man, and we go into it in our book. We call it the America's version of the Puritans remix, because we're big Taylor Swift fans. So anytime we can refer to things as versions, we do. And we found all of these little bits and pieces that make our culture a uniquely burned out culture, because we are American and because we believe you can pull yourself up from your bootstraps, and that if you need any form of government assistance, you're lazy and undeserving. Like all of these myths that become a part of the culture that have made it to the point where, and we all know someone, we all know someone, if we haven't said it ourselves, we all know someone who said, oh, I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's that deep. And so when it's that deep, no amount of individual solutions are really going to help you if you can't see the cultural context.
Yeah. And part of the phrase, like the culture of, is that the culture does not just accept it, it celebrates it.
Oh, yeah.
It is valued, not mm-hmm. It is worship, not just it happens. We started, I've now cringe, I'll be honest. I think I speak for Aaron here too, but I cringe every time I see hustle harder hashtag somewhere.
Me too.
Or like hashtag girl boss, or like all these things mm-hmm. that are, you are only connected to your productivity. And let me also say that all of the Puritans had wider beliefs. Like obviously they had a lot of other things, but the really insidious crap here is that those are also three of the tenets of capitalism.
Mm.
And so they line up perfect to where if, when we give this talk, nearly every time we say these things, people say exactly what you said about your grandpa. Like, oh, I've heard this before. My grandpa used to say this, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, because we in the United States praise resource accumulation.
Yeah.
Everything's about hoarding, and that's exactly what capitalism wants. And that's exactly what this theology fed. And everybody just kept building on.
Yeah.
And so it's not just a culture where this exists, because I think for me, that's the difference between American burnout and burnout in some other places, is the celebration and mm-hmm. of overwork.
Oh my gosh. I remember coming into the office some mornings and having people be like, I worked until midnight. Yeah, well, I was here until 2 a.m. I slept in the office. And I'm like, why are we talking? Like,
why are we proud of this?
Right.
The story we always tell when we talk about why we wanted to write this book, we were sat down for lunch with a dear friend of ours, and Kristen was explaining her mental health crisis and the journey that she was going through and what she was realizing about how her brain worked, and kind of took these Puritan ideas and capitalist ideas and like ramped it up to 100. And she was talking about how hard she worked and, you know, I can't work less than 90 hours a week and I never shut my brain off and I'm always doing this and this. And she was telling this tale of, I am not healthy.
Right.
This is not healthy for me. This is the reason I had double walking pneumonia and long COVID and lost my voice last year. And our friend was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that you went through that. And then they went, but to be honest, I'm a little bit jealous you can work that hard.
Oh!
And we finished the conversation and we got into the car. We looked at each other and we're like, that's why we're writing this book.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I know I've also heard you talk about empathy. So what is your definition of empathy, and what does that have to do with burnout? Because this person, it's like they wanted to show you empathy in that moment and say like, I'm so sorry you've had, but then they were also kind of jealous. And that to me is like, whoa, that's when you know it's wired deep. So talk about this whole empathy concept for me.
Our understanding of empathy from academic research and anecdotal evidence is that empathy is a mental framework. It's the consistent decision to choose understanding over assumptions of yourself and other people. And the summary of it for us is that you ask more questions and make less assumptions. That's it, of yourself and other people. It doesn't have to do with emotions necessarily. It's not something you're born with or not. It's something all of us have to practice every single day. Some seasons it's harder to practice it for other people. Some seasons it's harder to practice it for yourself. No matter what's happening, it's hard all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's not how we're wired. So what does that have to do with burnout is honestly one of the core questions we answer in the book. And we wrestled a lot with how to articulate it clearly, because like we knew in our souls it connected, but we wanted to build the case that it does. And so that is one of the things that we do. And essentially one of the reasons that the culture is burned out is that we all stopped asking questions. We all just accepted that this is the way it has to be.
Yes.
The way I live is how I have to live. The way work looks is how work has to look. if I am told that the only way to cure my burnout is to spend $19.95 on this candle or to follow this Instagram guru, I'm not going to question it. I'm just going to say yes and follow it. Also, we're not curious about ourselves or asking questions of ourselves. Does this work for me? Just because somebody told me that SoulCycle is the greatest thing that ever happened to them, do I actually like riding a bike?
Yes. No Peloton in my house.
I'm good. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It sounds like one of Dante's Gates of Hell. Like, right. It's just not for me.
Oh, you're funny. You crack me up.
And so we don't ever question what we need as people. And beyond emotional eating, sometimes we even question what makes us feel good. We live in a real shame culture in that everything that brings you joy is something someone else is going to make fun of. Yeah. And I think as we, the three of us talk, it is the summer of 2023. And I think we're seeing this, especially with Beyonce, Taylor Swift, and Barbie, that those things are all getting mocked by a lot of people because they bring people joy, and joy is to be mocked because joy is not part of capitalism. Joy is not part of this system that we're built in. And we don't ever question it. So having empathy for yourself and other people is asking more questions and making less assumptions. It's allowing for people to solve this puzzle on their own terms in the same way that you allow yourself to solve this puzzle on your own terms. And also for us anyway, the core of it is that being a human is really, really hard.
Yeah.
None of us get out of it alive. It's so hard. It breaks down our bodies. It's all real hard.
Yeah.
So just doing something every day because you've always done it is not required.
And that's so freeing to me. And that's what gets me excited about reinventing your life. Because when I mean, just for myself, when I started asking myself questions like, what would be possible if I didn't have to go to an office every day of the week? Like, what other skills do I have that I could bring to the world and get paid for them? And all of a sudden I started exploring, seeing like, well, crap, I'm going to go write a book and I'm going to go start a life coaching business. And, you know, it wasn't easy. It didn't all happen overnight. But now I look back at my life and go, what if I had not asked those questions? Going back to the curiosity that Aaron brought up earlier, right? Like, what if I didn't ask myself that? I'd probably still be sitting there making PowerPoint presentations and wanting to blow my brains out. And I don't like say that lightly, you know what I mean? But really, there were days where I was like, what if I drove my car into a tree just so I could be out of work for a couple of weeks? I don't want to die. I need a freaking break. And I don't know how to get it.
Whenever I had to have a surgical procedure, I used to say it was great because I'd get a nap.
Yes.
And like, I love my job. Let me be very clear. I have loved every job I've ever had. I've been incredibly blessed. I still sometimes daydreamed about how could I break my leg so that I could have a little bit of time off, but still be productive. Yeah. Thing I said many times.
We used to joke at the start of COVID. We used to joke about her getting COVID so that she could rest.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was like before we had vaccines,
yep.
People were dying. And she was like, you know, sometimes I think it might not be so bad because then I wouldn't have to go into work. Like, we have made those jokes because there has to be something that forces you to stop. And if we can't do it ourselves and we can't see past the barriers that we set up, then it has to be, sometimes it has to be our bodies that tell us. And COVID was a huge shift for a lot of people because so many of us didn't stop or hadn't stopped or didn't think they could stop. And then we were forced to.
Yes. I know there's a bit of a silver lining there. You know, there was a wake up call for a lot of people. So if we think about this culture of burnout, like, what do we do? Right. Because I appreciate that you're saying, look, it's not your fault, right? Just because the corporation expects you to work 24/7 and your body can't handle that, as no one should handle that because it's unrealistic. I don't want people to feel hopeless either. Like, there's nothing they can do and they're not empowered. So if someone's burnt out, what can they do?
That's such a great question. And we often joke that, you know, when we teach about these cultural contexts that we come in and we're like, so everything's terrible. We're sorry. Like, life is really hard, but we are fundamentally pragmatic people. And so we never just say like, guess what? We can blame the Puritans. And that means there's nothing you can do. No,
right.
It is harder to dismantle systems than it is to just do things individually. But you have to start somewhere. And we always teach to the idea that, you know, start somewhere small. Here are three things you can do today. Here are three things you can do next week. Here are three things you can do in 3 months. So what people can do if they're burned out, really, you have to take the time to evaluate who you are, what your body is telling you, you have to ask more questions of yourself. So why do I feel like I need to take on a side hustle or have a second job? Who are the people around you that can support you in this decision? Or maybe aren't supporting you in this decision. So for us, we have empathy is a huge part of it. Our solutions section of our book starts with empathy. And then it goes into boundary setting because, again, the culture doesn't want us to have boundaries because then people don't make money. And we have a real toxic relationship with success and productivity in this culture, as Kristen has already talked about, but really toxic ideas of what it means to be successful. And so it really starts with that period of like self-evaluation. Where do my ideas of success come from? You know, who are the people in my life that gave me these messages? There's no quick fix to burnout. Sorry. We don't sell those. If you would like those, you find an influencer.
No, because that's not even possible. I mean, I have been out of corporate now since August of 2020. And there are still weeks, if I have a heavy week in my business, that I'm like, whoa, I need a couple of days to recover from that. Like, it is still something that I am detoxing from. There is no quick fix. So if somebody's selling you a quick fix, run in the opposite direction.
In the imminent words of the Princess Bride, life is pain. Anyone who tells you differently is selling something.
There you go.
And it's very, very true. And I think we also need to clarify that one of the things that we discovered is that there is no clinical definition of burnout as a diagnosis. So it's not like a doctor can say you are burned out. They can talk about the comorbidities with it. Like being so burned out has then led to overexhaustion, has then led to other things. So literally there is no pill because it's not a disease.
Right.
It's not a disease. So you can't do that. You can treat the comorbidities while you are recovering. And so there are lots of ways to do that. Obviously, they can talk to yourself about restructuring some things. We all need guidance.
Yes.
We can't do this alone. But there's lots of little things.
And I think, you know, that is part of this self-evaluation process. And we go through it in the book ourselves. We talk about what holistic wellness, whole wellness looks like for us. And it's very, very different. And we've both succumbed throughout our lives to the pressure to be a version that society thinks we should be. You know, I'm a yoga practitioner and there's a lot of toxicity in the yoga world in terms of what you need to look like and how you should practice and what your philosophy should be. I had a lot of unlearning to do with that. But at the core of our journey on wellness is that understanding, is that empathy. And the more we talk about it with ourselves and we talk to other people, we hopefully shine that light on the fact that this is the journey you have to go on for yourself.
Yeah.
What works for me does not work for Kristen at all because of her body, her brain, her thoughts about life, what she finds joy in. You know, one of her big, big things that she loves to do to kind of unwind, disconnect, whatever, is play video games. I can't stand video games. I garden. She can't stand gardening.
Yeah, there's no one size fits all.
Yeah, that doesn't make me good at wellness or bad at wellness and vice versa. And that's when so much of our idea of wellness is tied to capitalism and making money, that messaging is really hard to overcome, that everyone has a Peloton now. Everyone was at SoulCycle, you know, everyone was doing CrossFit, everyone was on the Atkins diet, whatever, because they have to market it in a certain way to make money. Our brains get tricked into that. Oh, well, if I'm not going to the gym 3 times a week, I'm not doing enough. And it's the wellness industry, capitalism, puritanical theology will never think that we are doing enough. And so we have to be the ones to pull back and say, what does enough look like for me? What does rest look like for me? What does joy look like? What does reconnection look like? And we have to go through that process ourselves. And then we have to start communicating that to other people, which is again, hard.
Yeah, of course. So I want to shift gears just for a second, because I think it could be really interesting to just discuss the book journey a little bit. I know a lot of my listeners have a book on their heart and they want to write something, but fear is holding a lot of them back. And so did you feel any fears as you started to embark on this journey as an author? And if so, like, how did you overcome them?
Okay. So first of all, we need to say that we both wrote books already. They're called our doctorates and no one will ever read them.
Right.
So our fear wasn't about writing. Our fear is about all the rest of you reading this.
Yes,
so, like, we should say that we've written a lot for a lot of people who tear down our work, who ignore it, who are awful about it. And so the writing wasn't as much the piece for us. The sharing the now piece is a little bit more challenging and is a little bit more fear based at times. What I will also say is that if you have a book in you and you hate writing, that's okay. There are beautiful people out there who love writing your ideas down. They're called ghostwriters. It's not shameful. It is not a weakness. It does not make you not an author. So if you do not love the craft of taking your ideas from your brain onto paper, good news. Other people love that. Hire them and go move on with your life. We love that process. We love the process of taking our brains and making them, putting them on paper. So that's joyful for us. We love working together. It was really collaborative. We just opened up a Google Doc and started writing together and collaboratively and kind of all that stuff. It didn't really feel like a book. Mm-hmm. Until other people started editing it. And then we realized that our understanding of commas is an abomination unto God. And our poor line editor probably wanted to quit.
I feel like they should revoke our PhDs or something. There were so many comma mistakes, y'all.
Been there.
Yeah.
But that's why we have a copy editor.
And our publisher is incredible. We should say that too. Our publisher believes every publisher is different. Every relationship with your publisher is different. If self-publishing is how you want to go, mazel, that's fine. It wasn't our journey, wasn't our path, but there's not shame in that. Our publisher believes deeply in delivering stories that can change lives. So it was a real good ethical and visionary fit for us. And they're called Cardia House. We recommend them highly. And they took care of a lot of the handholding and the copy editing and some of the we don't know if this works. And they're like, it does. Or you could use some more citations here, because all writing is collaborative, all of it. And the best writing is the most collaborative, because no one has a good idea out of the gate. Everyone needs ideas to be sharpened. And one of the things that people, we should say too, we are unique in probably some of your listeners in that we wrote the whole thing in about 3 months. And a couple reasons for that. It was our full-time job.
Right. I didn't do anything else.
It was our right. full-time job. A lot of people don't have that privilege. Right. We have also been talking about and thinking about these things for 10 years.
Right.
So you hear these completely well-connected thoughts. We've done the whole, that meme of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia of Charlie and the Murder Wall. We've done all of those red threads.
Right.
We did all that work in conversations for the past 10 years.
Yeah. It's a journey. So I that you're sharing that, because even though it took 3 months to actually put it down on paper and get it structured as a book, this has been 10 years in the making. So
for sure.
Yeah, the process is different for everybody.
And we're nerds. There are more citations in this book than there are in my doctorate. We love an endnote.
Yeah.
Just love an endnote. That might not be you might never, ever, ever want to look anything up. There's just different journeys here. But in terms of fear, here's what I will say. I was terrified to give a TEDx talk. It was a dream of mine. I'd wanted to do it for years. I was terrified. So I did a couple things. I was honest with the people who were supporting me that I was overwhelmed. I had Aaron. I did it in South Lake Tahoe, California. I was the only one in my family. My mother and I were the only ones vaccinated. My husband couldn't come. Aaron couldn't come. It was very early in the vaccine cycle. And so the people who I wanted the most in that audience when I dreamed about giving this talk were 4 time zones away, with the exception of my mother, who is my emotional support mother. And I love her and she's amazing. But when I dreamed of that day, that isn't what that day looked like.
Yeah.
And so I leaned into that fear. I didn't pretend it didn't exist. I figured out what would not necessarily mitigate, feels the wrong word, because that fear was still there, man. I stepped on that red carpet and it fueled it.
Right.
So what I did instead was figure out the things that could ground me to remind me that I wasn't entirely that fear, that my fear wasn't the whole story. And also that sometimes your fear means that you understand the weight of what you're about to do. The fear that tells you you're not good enough and you'll never be good enough, that's what you need to have other people help shut up. And you need to do the practice to shut that down, because it's a lie. It's a lie we all believe, but it's a lie. The piece of fear that motivates you to make sure it's excellent, that you keep. And that you lean. And that's what allows you to be ready for the moment when the universe says, okay, it's time. Here's the door that you can step through it. And for us at different times in our writing, that's been the case. We both sent so many voice notes during our doctorates where we were crying with each other and talking about how hard that was. That wasn't a piece of this story, but that doesn't mean that fear wasn't a part of our process at any point in time. And learning the difference between those fears is what will often be the game changer for you. And then let me say, whatever story is in you, the rest of us need to hear it.
Yes. Yes, we do. That's important.
This isn't to be like all anti-Pastor Kristen right now for a minute, but you withholding that story from us might just not allow somebody else to grow. So if you need to see it that way, that you withholding that story from us is being rude. And therefore giving us that story as a service, chase that man because it's true. If you need to tell the story to set your own self free, do it. It's worth it. If you don't think anyone is going to read your story, I promise you they will. I write fan fiction all the time. Let me tell you how many people read words I never thought any human would ever read. And I get comments from people that are like, so I printed this out to take it to my therapist. I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
That's amazing.
Excuse me? Like, you just have no idea. Once your words leave your body, they aren't yours anymore. They belong to the universe, and the universe will use them however the universe will use them. So do what you need to get it out of you. You'll feel better. We promise. It always feels better when it's on paper than when it's in your head. And just do the damn thing.
Yes. And we're so glad that neither of you gave in to fear, because your book is going to change a lot of lives. It is called The Culture of Burnout: Why Your Exhaustion Is Not Your Fault. And this is going to be available on Amazon for pre-order right now, actually. And tell us the date of the official book launch when everyone can get the paperback version.
Yes. So both versions, Kindle and paperback, will be available on October 3rd, 2023, Kristen's 40th birthday. What a way to celebrate. We will both be on a transatlantic flight to Ireland because that is our lives. But, you know, we'll probably have some Prosecco in the airport lounge.
As you should. Celebrate.
As we
this.
Should. Yes. So you can pre-order the Kindle version now, and the link will be in the show notes for this podcast, I know. And then we'll also send a link to our newsletter if you would like a reminder. So yeah, it's almost a month away. We're pretty excited.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to leave you both with the last word. If you could say one thing to the women listening who know they want to make a change in their life, but they don't know how to get started, what would you say to them?
I would say start small. If it can be so overwhelming, there can be so much fear and anxiety, but behind all of the, I'm not enough, I'm too tired, I don't have the time, like those cycles of thoughts. But a phrase that we use all the time in our friendship and in our business from one of my favorite bands, a tiny Scottish rock band called Frightened Rabbit, is, and while I'm alive, I'll make tiny changes to earth. So not everybody is called to be on the TEDx stage. That one is, and I point to my best friend. She is the called to be on that stage. Not all of us are, and that's okay too. But start small. Anything is better than nothing. Take 5 minutes a day to write down some ideas about questions you would ask yourself. It's hard work. So start small and give yourself grace. We're all going to have days we're bad at it. We're all going to have days where we're too tired to do anything. That just means you're a human being. There's not a value attached to that. Our society has enculturated us that there is a value attached to that decision, but there's not. So start small, give yourself some grace.
Building on that, two suggestions. One, get out a post-it note, write down, my worth is not tied to my output, slap it on your bathroom mirror and look at it while you brush your teeth. And the second one is that every time you find a social media account that gives you a panic attack or makes you feel bad about yourself, unfollow it.
Yes.
Unblock it.
Follow it.
Block it.
Yeah. Wise, wise words from the authors of The Culture of Burnout. Thank you both for being here today. This has been an absolutely delightful conversation. I could literally talk to you all afternoon, but I know people have busy lives and they have to go cure their burnout. So we're going to let everybody go, and we'll have all the notes below for everybody listening. Thank you, ladies, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.
Thank you so much. We loved it.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you're inspired to take action by committing to one of the tips or strategies we talked about in today's episode. And if you want accountability and support, I've got your back.
Join my private Facebook group, Successful Working Women Rocking Reinvention, today. You'll find a community of like-minded women waiting to support you, exclusive content, and helpful resources to ensure you succeed. Lastly, if you loved this episode, do me a favor and be sure to leave a review. Together, we can encourage more women to live their purpose. See you next time.